The Ides of September are upon us. Beware the Ides. It's September the 15th, a couple thousand and 11. It's McCown and Brent on the radio program. It's Primetime, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. We're on, we're on the Fan Radio Network, and we're on Sirius, channel 157 on Sirius across all around the world. And we're also on Roger Sportsnet. Later, Gar Snow, general manager, or managing general, if you will, of the New York Islanders will join us. They locked up John Tavares today, another one of those $5 million plus contracts. Tim Danson will be with us, Steve Moore's attorney. They finally have a court date, and as it's almost ridiculous. It's a year from now. September 24th, October 22nd, 2012, but at least the civil suit will finally be heard. That's all coming up on the program. Now, was it earlier this week or last week?
Earlier this week,
the idiots on Hockey Central at noon, which some of you may be familiar with and some of you may have never even heard of.
It's a fine program.
Yeah, it's all right. A lot of self-serving stuff on there. But
never.
So McLean and Kiprios are on there, and McLean decides to, announce this. Here's what he said.
The Ottawa Senators, the rumor is they lost $14 million last year, the Ottawa Senators. So what's their payroll down this year from last year? $14 million. I mean, eventually, you've got to get your business in order so that so all of a sudden, Ottawa's in a rebuilding. Why are they in a rebuilding? Well, because they had to drop their payroll by $14 million so that they don't lose a fortune.
And so, rumblings whether or not Eugene Melnyk might be in it for the long run, too.
Meaning, is Mr. Melnyk interested in selling the franchise? Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of issues that were raised by Dumb and Dumber. True, not true. Here's the owner of the Ottawa Senators. Here's Eugene Melnyk. Mr. Melnyk,
Good evening, Bob.
You've lost $14 million, according to McLean. Did you find it yet?
You know what? I'm still I'm out there with buckets and boots, looking for it. So it's just the way you said it. It's great. But,
so we know it's a private company.
I'll tell you what. The math, it's so difficult for them to do the math, for anybody to do the math of exactly what you actually lost day-to-day or made day-to-day, only because this is where the big mistake was. When I just heard about this. Somebody said, hey, by the way, you're on McCown. I said, what? Not McCown, this thing is that you lost this much money.
Right.
What people don't figure is did somebody forget that all these genius agents made sure that us stupid owners went out and signed front-end loaded deals that now are starting to peter down to where they should be or less. So, yeah, we got whacked in the earlier years when everybody started going for front-end loaded contracts, me one of them.
Yeah.
That's with all the, unrestricted. And they could dictate what they wanted. They said, listen, this guy's going to pay. Well, everybody knows about this, so I don't have to rehash old stuff. But, we lost money last year, and I've said it all along. I've got to go into, which is ludicrous, we have to go into the second round of the playoffs just to break even.
Right.
Now, that changes dramatically over the next several years, not because I brought down my salaries, which helps a lot, but because all the front-end loaded stuff is gone.
Right.
We're going.
But you would acknowledge you are in a, for lack of a better term, rebuilding phase. You have shed some contracts. You have gotten younger. Your team certainly isn't at the same point it's been for the last several years, which is either certainly aspiring to championships. I don't think you're in that position anymore, but is that part of the natural evolution of the franchise, Eugene, or is that as a direct response to the economic realities that you face?
Now, purely hockey,
right?
Not the economic realities. You know, thank goodness for people that don't have, you know, the size of egos that some people do. And, you know, Brian sits down and he faces reality and I face reality and we say, guess what? Our team sucks. And no matter what you do to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, he ain't going to get you a Stanley Cup, no matter what. I mean, you could keep trying to reshuffle here, reshuffle there, and how many years. At the end of the day, wipe the sleep, you know, the things clean, the slate clean, and you say, you know what? I can get the same bang for my buck right now, paying somebody $1 million versus paying him $3.5 million. How ludicrous to God. And on top of that, you know, when you start young, you're starting fresh. You've every single, and the fans have totally embraced this. You know, a lot of people at first, you know, in Ottawa, especially, you know, internally, the marketing guys going, oh my God, you know, how are we going to sell this? I said, very easy. What have you sold in the last, you know, what have you been selling for the last 3 years? People aren't stupid in Ottawa. They're very astute hockey fans, as they are right across Canada. And they see the writing on the wall, and they said, you know, these guys aren't going to make it. I'll tell you where they're wrong. They're wrong if they think we're going to come in at 16. But, you know, every single win, every single goal by one of these young kids is going to be applauded and is going to be everybody's going to be walking around knowing, hey, it can only get better off of this. And this is not going to be a disaster zone. We are going. We have too much young talent that we don't even know what to, you know. Well, we know what to do with, but it's almost like you don't know what to do with it.
Steven, I guess, Gene, you can only strip it down so far. You can go as young as you want, but there's a salary floor in this league. And so, now, obviously, good times for Canadian teams with the Canadian dollar being as strong as it is. But if you're a non-playoff team in Ottawa, can you make money? Because somebody's got to be a non-playoff team in this league. Somebody's, you know, there are teams, somebody's not going to make the playoffs.
Oh, we don't have to make the playoffs anymore to make money. We don't have to. And I'm telling you now.
With your current payroll.
All those big fat contracts that we had before that, you know, weren't getting us anywhere. You know, our ticket sales are ahead of last year. Ahead. And, you know, the radio talk shows in Ottawa and the media in Ottawa have embraced it. The fans have embraced it. And they said this was the smart thing to do. And it's not going to be that painful. It's going to be very entertaining hockey. You know, when we kick a few of these teams in the butt, you know, people are going to go home saying, did you see that young 19-year-old? You know, take out this guy and that guy, and you know, I can take you through the center, you know, the front line, the defense, and on goalie, and every single one of those areas, we're very, very, very strong and very deep. By the way, very, very deep.
So
we
as
won't
you
be able to afford. This is what's going to happen 5 years from now. I won't be able to afford the salaries of all the stars I have.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going to go with this. So as you pare it back down, you have younger players, therefore the salary demands are not what they would be. But if this team is and winds up being what you think and hope it is, then you know that all of a sudden, and not all of a sudden, it is all of a sudden, those salaries escalate in a big hurry. Soon as all those entry-level deals are done.
You know what? But you don't want that to happen. You know what? We got sucked into that same game.
Well, you're right.
You know what? We learned the hard way where you got, and it went right back to where it was 7, 8 years ago when I got into the league, or 9 years ago, where the saps out there that are owners listen to their GMs and they say, well, we got to get this guy. Well, right. He's $3.5 million. You know, yeah, but he's mediocre. Yeah, but he could make the difference. I mean, give me a break. You know, and that's what happens a lot of these times. And, you know, I love them all, but there's a few out there that, you know, and then you got the agents playing one with the other.
Yep.
You just don't play the game. You ignore these guys and say, look, I've got my depth. I'm developing these guys internally. 5 years from now, I'll tell you, Bob, that'll be a great problem to have. And by the way, if we are as good as we are, guess what? I may be getting into the second, third, or fourth round of the playoffs, and that's where all the money is.
Right, and then it changes, changes the economics for you.
That, that payroll.
Yeah, well. So, well,
you guys really want to talk about money all the time.
No, not really. I mean, it just, you know, it started with this notion of the loss, and so we've sort of kind of tried to take it through where you are now, and you are, by your own acknowledgement, I suppose, for the first time since you got the franchise, really, this is the first time you've really shaved it back and said, okay, we had that run, now we have to start a new run, and to get to that new run, we're going to have to carve this thing up a little bit and shave it down, not to necessarily to the bone, but pretty close, and build from here.
Well, you've got to look at, I'll tell you one thing. It's even less than on one hand, the number of franchises that have been, been able to continually deliver a playoff contender within a reasonable amount of money. Detroit, I can point to as being a model franchise for that. I mean, these guys, like, year after year, what Jimmy does over there and just brings, he just brings in the talent, and, they've been very, very fortunate. Some people just keep throwing money at things, hoping that somehow things will happen. But in this case, I think we by far have the best young team in the NHL. Young, but these kids are 19, 20, and they will, 2-3 years from now, it's going to be, they're all 25, 26. I remember talking to Spezza when he was a junior, and I tried to get him onto St. Mike's Majors. I mean, these guys, they grow up quickly. 4 or 5 years is nothing in the hockey world.
Yeah.
But Gene, didn't you just, I tell you, you were just talking about teams that's, getting into the playoffs year after year without spending a lot of money, or some teams that's spending a lot of money. Didn't you guys shut the game down for a year to get rid of the kind of competitive imbalance based on economics? I thought that's what the lockout was about.
Well, yeah, I think I'm not agreeing with you on that, but it's, I don't think we expected to be where we are. I didn't expect to be where we are as far as the economics. Maybe some people did, but we certainly didn't. And but we're a very unique market in that it is extremely price sensitive. We work to sell every damn ticket. Every ticket has to be sold. But they do it, and they sell out. They had more sellouts. I mean, 3 years ago, I think we had 39 sellouts. It's not like some of the other franchises. They open up the doors and there's 200 people lined out outside with thousands of dollars, just whatever they can get. So we are price sensitive. We can't spend what others do or charge what others do. We are limited to that, and we make it by just being innovative in the way we market our product, and I think our people do a great job doing it.
Just, and that's, again, in the context of everything you've said here, let's just turn to what the other part of what the boys said this week, which is the suggestion you would sell the team. Under what circumstances would you consider selling the Ottawa Senators?
I would say if they moved Scotiabank Place up to heaven. It's not going to happen. I mean, whoever came up with that. I was hoping to come up with something funny. That wasn't even funny. But it was no, I'm being serious. That team's never going to be sold. There's only so many franchises in Canada. You're a hockey person. What else do you want in life? I mean, it's, you own an NHL hockey franchise that can be competitive and you can have a lot of fun, and I have a lot of fun with. And it's not for sale. It's never for sale. It's not a number that you can come up with that I would even consider.
Is it?
It's just a waste of time.
Is it more fun than you thought it would be? I know it's been a while now, but like when you got into it, I know that you had anticipation.
It's a lot more intense than I thought it would be.
Really? Yeah.
A lot more intense. There's a lot more, and I tell that to people because I've got friends that were looking at buying franchises, and I said, whatever you do, give up your other job because it can. God forbid you. Luckily I live 2,500 miles away, but. You've got, if I lived in Ottawa, this would be a full-time job because of the demand on your time and everything else that, you want to do in the community. Luckily, I've got a great management team that, does that for us, for me. And I, when I do come up, I it's nonstop 18 hours a day. But it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more fun than I thought. A lot more intense, and a lot more, absorbing of your life than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah. Listen, you've given us plenty of time here. We want to let you go. Thank you very much. As always, we wish you the best of luck for the upcoming season. If you wander through Toronto, come and see us. We'd love to talk to you again. Thanks, Eugene.
Yeah. Thank you.
Eugene Melnyk, the owner of the Ottawa Senators. Not denying the suggestion by our friend McLean that the franchise lost $14 million, but denying the suggestion that the franchise is for sale or that he's looking at taking on partners or anything else. He seems perfectly content and indicated he expects to own the franchise forever.
Yes.
I don't have to stay here forever. We hope he does, but that seems somewhat unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
But a sale of the franchise might well be over his dead body.
Maybe.
Eugene Melnyk. When we come back, more hockey talk. Gar Snow, the general manager of the New York Islanders, dealing with the reality that the franchise long term doesn't or may not have a home. It doesn't right now. Does that impact on the general manager and how you do business? And we'll also address the signing announced today, that of John Tavares to a long-term contract. Gar Snow next when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 157 and Sportsnet. Passing here, McCown and Brunton in Toronto studios. Later, Tim Danson, Steve Moore's attorney, will join us. Today, the New York Islanders announced the signing of John Tavares to a multi-year deal. In fact, a six-year contract. The deal will go into effect next year and run through the 2017-2018 season. That's a long time. Not the longest deal ever done. Not even the longest deal ever done by the New York Islanders, but a sizable deal nonetheless. And here's the general manager, or as we like to say, managing general of the New York Islanders. Here's Garth Snow. Garth, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for joining us. I heard John Tavares on our flagship station, The Fan in Toronto, earlier today, and he remarked that this deal was a pretty easy one, that you guys started talking around the middle of the summer, and you weren't that far apart, and it wasn't that hard to get this deal done. Would you categorize it in the same way?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Obviously, it was a great dialogue between myself and John's representative, Pat Brisson, and we obviously wanted John here for the long term, and John wanted to be part of the Islanders, and it made it that much easier.
Can you sum up what it means for the Islanders to make this commitment and lock up John Tavares, Garth?
Well, he's obviously our cornerstone young player that we have in our lineup, which we've built through the draft. We've developed our team, and John obviously is right up there with the other young talented core that we have. So we're ecstatic. This is a great day for not only the organization but our fan base. John is obviously a fan favorite, and he's played at an extremely high level since being drafted, and he's just going to keep getting better.
One of the concerns that some general managers have, in fact, some owners obviously have, including one we just talked to, Gene Melnick, the owner of the Ottawa Senators, is the inflationary scenario for guys signing their second deal or their first deal after their entry-level deal. And that's what we have here with John. He's only 21 years of age, and this is his first contract other than an entry-level deal. I mean, do you share that sentiment that at least in some cases this is maybe getting a little out of whack? I'm not suggesting the Tavares deal, but in other deals?
Well, I think since we came out of the work stoppage, there's been a different climate for sure from even when I was playing. But you know what? That's the environment we're in, and bottom line, John is a key player for us. One of the leaders, not only on the ice but off the ice, and we're happy to have him for the next several years as an Island.
We understand the restrictions that must exist for a franchise like the Islanders, and you're not alone, that there are teams that cannot get to the cap, can't get anywhere near the cap, and in fact may struggle to get to the floor. And I'm not suggesting for a second that the Islanders are in that position, but we've all heard and read and anecdotally seen the struggles and the difficulties the franchise has. How does that impact on your day-to-day ability to do your job?
It honestly hasn't had that much of an impact day-to-day for what I do. Obviously, you know, we're in a situation with the arena we're in. There's limited revenues compared to probably other teams or other organizations. But you know what, on a day-to-day basis, I have a very supportive owner, and we're in year four of this rebuild that we set out on, and we're sticking to the plan, and we feel that we have a team that can compete with any team in this league.
In signing a long-term deal like this, Garth, with the player and his agent, does the uncertainty about where the team's going to be, does that factor in? Is that part of the conversation? Was there any reassurance you could offer them in terms of, where the Islanders are going to play hockey down the road?
Well, at the end of the day, we know we're in this building for the next 4 years. From a hockey ops standpoint, I block out all the other issues that go along with it. We're just focused on the hockey season now. We're looking forward to opening night against Florida, and really, that's all you can do is focus in on the hockey games.
But from Tavares' end, it would seem to me that would be a question you'd ask if I was him, and I'm looking at my future, and his agent is looking after his future. What that must come up across the table. Where do you think we're going to be?
Well, that's probably a question to ask his agent or John. I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but I know in this instance, John loves being an Islander. He obviously has a very close relationship with Charles Wong, our owner, and John and I have always had a great relationship. So, I'm not going to put words in other people's mouths. It's a situation where we're just focusing in on hockey and all the arena stuff that we went through in the off seasons in the rearview mirror.
With Garth Snow, the general manager of the New York Islanders. Where are you on Josh Bailey? I suppose you're probably not going to tell us, but do you feel there's a chance that this deal can get done before tomorrow?
Well, I've had numerous conversations. It's been an ongoing negotiation, and we'll see where it ends up tomorrow morning.
Is that the deadline?
Yeah, we've had a policy since I was a player here. When Mike Milbury was the general manager, that if a player misses the first day of training camp, he's going to be out for the year.
So it's either tomorrow or nothing.
Yeah.
And what do you as you get to a deadline like this? And I don't know whether you've had experience. I don't recall you having had experience at like the 11th hour, which is really where we're at. I mean, how do you deal with that? Are you in the office tonight? Are you available? Do you expect to talk to Josh's representatives? Do you have meetings scheduled for tomorrow? Where are you on the process, if you can, Garth?
Well, my policy has always been I'm not going to comment publicly on negotiations, but I spent a significant amount of time with Josh's agent. We put a couple of different offers on the table, and we'll see where it all shakes out.
What was the origin? I know that that policy predates you, Garth, but the kind of rationale and the origin of that idea that it, once the first day of training camp hits, that's it, you're not talking anymore.
Yeah, well, I guess the concern is it disrupts the team. And, you know, we need to build a team to grow and train and play together through training camp. And we can't let any one person or, you know, not specifically talking about Josh, but in general, you can't let one player affect the team's preparation for the season. So it's a policy that, you know, as a player, I knew it. As an Islander and, you know, as a general manager, I like it because I can build my team from day one of training camp and not have to worry about any of the other issues that could be on the outside.
I probably should know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway because I can't off the top of my head think of any. Have you had a player get to the 11th hour and not do a deal?
Yes, a couple of years back, Sean Bergenheim.
Ah, okay.
The player that missed the first day we signed him the next summer.
That was that, though, for that year.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, we have last week we spent some time reflecting on life in Russia.
Yeah.
And the tragedy that that took place there, and we are still feeling the pain of that. You played there. Give us your take. Take a minute, if you will, and tell us what your experience was like. Were you afraid to fly? Did you have concerns about your for your safety while you were playing there?
Well, first and foremost, it was a horrific tragedy, and I couldn't put any words to describe how awful that. Everyone here in our organization in the hockey world felt and still feel, and you know, the best wishes, the best regards to, you know, the families. And
indeed,
for me, I think of, you know, the kids, the wives, the parents, the brothers, the sisters. It's just a tragedy that words, you know, I have a tough time even talking about it now. Just an awful, awful tragedy. But my experience in Russia, and I played in St. Petersburg, got there in August and came home in December for a break and never went back. I guess the best way for me to share my experience, it made me appreciate being in North America.
Were you uncomfortable with flying there? I mean, we fly in North America and think very little of about safety when we get on an airplane. I mean, some people don't like fly. I don't like to fly very much. So I'm not a very good flyer at this point in my life. But nonetheless, in truth, I don't get on an airplane and think about safety issues. Did you while you were there?
I never felt as safe as I do like I do when I'm in North America.
It was different at least, Garth, wasn't it?
Yeah, in my experience,
yeah.
It was.
And was I assume that was at least some part of the reason why you decided not to go back when you came back after just a very short time there?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I got there beginning of August for training camp and met my team in Finland, where SKA, like a sports club in Army,
right,
were training and came back for, I think, two breaks during the course of the season over there. They have a 1 week, 7 to 10 day hiatus to play in different tournaments. And I just made the decision when I came home in December not to return.
Yeah, that's enough of that, huh? Listen, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it, and thank you for your candor on all topics concerned. Best of luck this year.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Garth Snow, the general manager of the New York Islanders. John Tavares signing a long-term contract with the club today. When we come back, Steve Moore's case will finally go to trial. But when I say finally go to trial, it doesn't mean it's right around the corner. Oh, there's a court date, but it's a long way away. We'll talk about it when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 157 and Sportsnet. Before the hour, McCown and Brunt in our Toronto studios. This is the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. It's Primetime Sports. On the Fan Radio Network, coast to coast, around the world on Sirius 157 and on Rogers Sportsnet on television, if you don't own a radio or don't believe in the process. There's a court date in the action, the civil case, Steve Moore v. Todd Bertuzzi. Is there anybody else named in the case? Are the Vancouver Canucks named in it? In the action?
I don't think so.
We had the guy who could answer that, couldn't we? Here is Steve Moore's legal representative. Here's Tim Danson. Hi, Tim. How you been?
Good. Thank you very much. How are you?
Good. We just want to be clear on this. Are there other parties other than Todd Bertuzzi named in your action?
Yeah, Todd Bertuzzi and the Vancouver Canucks are the two defendants through Orca Bay, which is the parent company.
Now, they are not linked effectively in this action because Bertuzzi, even though he was a member of the Canucks, is not covered, I'm made to understand, by any Canucks insurance policy. Is that true?
I mean, I've seen some reports on that. I'm not at liberty to talk about the insurance coverage, but certainly everybody knows it's a public record that Todd Bertuzzi was convicted of assault causing bodily harm. So that presents problems for insurers.
Ah, I see.
Now, Tim, people are going to listen to this tonight and say, boy, it's the trial date's a year from now. It seems to have taken an awful long time to wind its way through to finally get a trial date. Is that normal in a civil action like this?
There's a lot of civil cases that take a long time to run through the system. We're actually disappointed it's taken so long. It's been very difficult for Steve Moore and his family. But I think at this point in time, we're looking forward now, not backwards, and now that there's a trial date, the end is in sight, and I think that's important for Steve and his family. But I think it's important for your listeners to be reminded that that Steve Moore would much rather be playing professional hockey than being in a courtroom, and there really is no amount of money that can ever compensate Steve Moore for the loss of his NHL career. So I would say to you, if someone could wave a magic wand, give Steve Moore his life back, give him back his NHL career, he'd give up this lawsuit in a nanosecond. Because I think this is something that all Canadians can identify with. His entire life, all he dreamed about was making it to the NHL. He dedicated his entire life to making this dream a reality, which is the dream of so many Canadians. Hard work, determination, discipline, commitment, athletic excellence, and just sheer love of the game. That's all he wanted. And then not only does he achieve his dream, he's then drafted by what was then, you'll recall, probably the best team in the NHL. The Colorado Avalanche back then. I mean, he was playing with the likes of Joel Sakic, Peter Forsberg, Haidu, Kariya, Tange, Solani. I mean, this was a team of all-stars, and that's the team that drafted Steve Moore. So, I mean, he didn't just achieve his dream, he achieved it in Technicolor, and then through the most senseless, cowardly, and brutal act of criminal violence in sports history, it's stolen from him, it's taken away from him by Todd Bertuzzi and the Vancouver Canucks. So, I just think people need to be reminded that while Steve's the plaintiff in this lawsuit, you really can't say that the courtroom is where he wants to be. It's really the last place he wants to be,
right?
But it's involuntarily, in one sense, that he's in this lawsuit, and I think everybody could appreciate he'd rather be playing hockey, just like his brother Dominic, which of course Leaf fans will remember when Dom played for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Sure. With Tim Danson, who represents Steve Moore. Let's get to the core of this. How is Steve doing?
That's of course, and I know that it's a fair question you ask, but of course that's going to be a big issue in the trial, and I just can't comment on issues that go to the merits of the case. But the reality is that we're now a year away, and the public will see the witnesses that are being called, the doctors, and see firsthand what the real truth is, not rumors and speculation. And certainly Steve Moore will testify, and his family, and you know, in relatively short period of time, given the history of this matter, those questions are going to be answered. But they're going to be answered in a context of evidence and medical experts, and people can judge for themselves.
Let me ask you a slightly different, very general question then. What is Steve Moore doing?
Again, that's you know, I mean, he's doing his best to get on with his life, but those are all issues that are current in the lawsuit right now, and it's important that I not comment on those issues, because those are the live issues in the lawsuit. But certainly, I know I appreciate the question, but you know, I really can't get into the details of that.
Has discovery begun?
It completed.
Oh, it's completed now.
Yeah. So we're, you know, we're now entering into the what we call the pretrial process, and you know, even though a year sounds like it's a long way away, it'll move along pretty quickly. But you know, clearly, you know, we know what's part of the public record. We know what he's pleading in his statement of claim, and what's been discussed in the past. And without a doubt, with all the issues we've been you know, hearing about in terms of concussions, these are going to be front and center in the lawsuit, and I think people are going to be educated by probably some of the top experts in the world, instead of 30-second sound bites. And I think you know, one of the you know, it's tragic that Sidney Crosby is going through what he's going through, but you know, it's interesting when you know, for those of us who listened to his news conference last week and the problems that he's having, you know, these are the same things that you know, many of the symptoms that Steve Moore has been describing and talking about for many, many years. So I think, you know, people are gaining a much better appreciation of the seriousness of these concussion injuries, and why, you know, many of us characterize them for what they are, which is brain injuries.
Tim, acknowledging that there are unique circumstances to this case, in general, how often are cases like this settled before they get to court?
I think that if you were to look at it, statistically, look at all the civil cases that are in the system, no matter what the issue is, overwhelming majority of them settle. But then there are those cases that don't settle, and right now, all I can tell you is that after all these years, there has not been a resolution, and we have a trial date, and you know, we look forward to it to the extent that, you know, the end is in sight. And you know, one of the difficulties in cases like this, people have a lot of personal opinions. At least now, you know, Steve Moore will have an opportunity to put his case, you know, before his peers, a jury, and that the truth and the facts will speak for themselves, and put his life in the hands of the jury, and is confident that justice will be done, whatever that outcome is.
About 2 minutes here, and I want to throw something at you here, more of on a personal level. I mean, obviously, being involved in this, it can't be totally a personal observation. But I was before you came on, I said to Stephen, I said, I wonder how the Moore incident, still clear in our minds, really relates to what the NHL, what hockey is going through now. The issue with hits to the head, the issue with fighting. How do you get these things out of the game? And obviously the Sidney Crosby thing, as you addressed a few minutes ago, is more front and center. It's more recent, and it relates to an incident on the ice that is far more benign than the Bertuzzi Moore incident. But I wonder if they are relatable, and whether you or Steve think about the impact that had or could have had or maybe should have had on the game. About a minute.
Well, I think the way I would answer that is that you know, Steve Moore, you know, sustained a career-ending injury as a result of criminal violence on the ice, and so all of these issues, every aspect of the game, as pleaded in the statement of claim, is going to be put before the court, and so these issues are going to be examined very, very carefully. In the context of facts that will be explored and subject to cross-examination. And so I think that you know, that is going to be very beneficial because people are going to learn the truth. And that's all, you know,
right.
The great line from Mark Twain, the only thing, you know, that what the good thing about the truth is that you never have to worry about what you've said. And so the truth of the game of hockey and its impact on Steve Moore will be put before the jury. And ultimately, there'll be a decision on those facts. But as I say, if someone has a magic wand, we'll take that magic wand any day.
I hear you. Tim, good of you to take time for us. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Tim Danson, our thanks to him, to Gar Snow, to Eugene Melnick. Have a good evening. We'll see you tomorrow night on Primetime.